You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Good Tuesday evening, everybody. Larry Hardesty and Gordon Damer in for Chris Carlin at 1-800-919-3776. You can reach us out also on social media at Hardesty ESPN, at Gordon Damer, at ESPN NY, 98_7 FM, along with Brian the Brain and JP. We're here until midnight. Then it's Anita Marks in for us on ESPN New York tonight. Hey, Gordon.
Larry, what's going on, my man?
What's happening, my friend? I want to start with a little baseball, and it's so fascinating to me because you and I had a discussion last night, Gordon, about where both local teams are as we wind down the season. And clearly, the Yankees are in a better position than the Mets, but neither team is in a great position for the postseason. They really aren't. Don LaGreca had an interesting take on the Mets from a fan standpoint about how they were reacting about Mets taking two or three from the Yankees this weekend. But I'll get to that in a second. But what I wanted to pick your brain about is, where's this Yankee team going? Gio Urshela's playing shortstop. Is this going to be the future? Clearly, Gleyber Torres is not a shortstop anymore. I mean, Aaron Boone has decided, I don't know whether it's sabermetrics or the eye test, but either one, he's like, you know what? We're done with Gleyber Torres at shortstop right now. So now you got Gio Urshela there, who, Gordon, to be honest, has not really played third that well this year either.
Well, I mean, compared to who he had as a shortstop previously, Urshela is probably going to look like Mark Belanger. And really, as bad as Glaber's defense was, I think the bigger issue with him this season has been his offense.
No question.
If he had been hitting like he was a couple of years ago, I could live with some errors at shortstop, even as costly as those errors can be. I think that this move is partly it's crisis time, right? We got less than 20 games to go, and we can't continue to shoot ourselves in the foot with a guy who is a subpar defender at a very important position. And I think also part of it is, hey, maybe, just maybe by putting him back at second base, we can get some, maybe there's part to it that is a little bit of a mental thing, and that's what's impacted his offense. But it's pretty clear at this point the Yankees are in crisis mode, and they're looking to remove all possible mistakes, self-made mistakes, right? Like, you can't continue to play a guy who has been a bad shortstop offensively and defensively, at least defensively, seems to have been regressing, right? Mm. I mean, he seems to be getting worse, so I think that that's part of what it is. But, I mean, it's not – we talked about this during the season. Like, maybe you put LeMahieu at first, and you put Gleyber back at second, you move Urshela from third to shortstop. If you have to move every single guy on the defense in the infield, that was probably not a very good plan from jump.
Yeah, and I also wonder if it's like, Gordon, kind of an audition of what we're going to do with some players next year. Is it, okay, are we going to keep Gleyber Torres? What are we going to do? It's because something has to be decided. Are you going to keep DJ at third? Is he going to be your everyday third baseman? What are you doing at first base? I mean, has Gary Sanchez, with some offensive, you know, spark over the past month, 6 weeks, has he kind of solidified himself as, you know what, maybe we can work with him, maybe we can bring him back? I mean, are these moves kind of like some answers to what we need to do next year?
Yeah, I mean, well, clearly they're going to have a ton of questions to answer. I think the first one they got to have to answer is it's clear you're not going to put Gleyber back at shortstop, right?
Right.
So that much
mm-hmm.
is clear. We know that. Is he going to be the second baseman? Is he not going to be on the team? When they signed LeMahieu to the deal that they did, Cashman said that the plan was they signed him with the plan that he's going to be the everyday second baseman.
Right.
Pretty clear that, you know, plans change. So it's nice that you have the maneuverability of LeMahieu to move him to other spots if need be. But this is not – it's not the ideal situation for sure, right? Like, moving the second baseman to third, the third baseman to short, the shortstop to second base. Who knows what's going on? I mean, who's on first was supposed to be a comedy routine. It was not supposed to be what you're looking at 20 games left in the season.
You're right. And what's funny, Gordon – well, kind of. Let's say ironic, not funny, because it's not funny. But what's ironic is the Mets are in a similar situation, right, for next year. What are you doing with Jeff McNeil? I mean, in case you've forgotten, Robinson Cano is back next year, and he is the second baseman, and you owe him some money. So, you know, what are they going to do with their infield? What are they bringing Javi Baez back? Are you going to sign him also to play alongside Lindor? I mean, you know, who's their third baseman next year? So it's interesting that both these teams have some things that they've got to work on for the infield. Clearly, in my opinion, and I'll fall on this sword because I'm a Met fan, I think the Mets have far more questions than the Yankees do. Because the Mets have questions not only infield, outfield, they got questions with starting pitching. Gordon, who's the starting pitcher on this team next year? Stroman's a free agent. Syndergaard's a free agent. I don't know what I'm getting from DeGrom. Tyrone Walker is a guy who's shown me something, but which Walker is it? Is Walker of the first half or Walker of the second half? Because he pitched more than he did last year. And Tyler McGill, I mean, he's almost been like Syndergaard this year with his consistency. So both these teams have a lot of answers that they have to come with and hadn't even started to talk about the outfield with the Mets.
Yeah, and you have to – I think when the Mets questions, you have to question who's going to be the one answering those questions, right? Like, are they going to have some sort of shakeup in the front office after the underperformance of the year, right? Sandy was in the role that he is in right now, was not really supposed to be in that role, kind of got forced into that role because of everything that happened before the season with Jared Porter. So I could definitely see with an under – no matter how the Mets season ends, barring some miracle run – this is going to be a very disappointing Mets season. No matter what you expected coming into the year, you did not think mid-September that you were going to be looking at a team that was just battling for 500. That mm-hmm. is not what anybody expected. And when that's the case, with a new owner who has gotten his feet wet a little bit, right, now has had a little taste of what owning a team is like, it would not shock me at all if he says, you know what, I want to have a fresh start next year and really get off to a far better thing where we're not the same old Mets anymore, right? Like when we hear stories this year, even with Steve Cohen being the owner, there's a lot of stories that feel very reminiscent of the same old Mets. And mm-hmm. I would think that a guy in his position with his wealth, he's not used to being mocked, certainly. Criticized, I'm sure he is, but mocked for his organization. I would think that it would not be a shock at all if he goes out and shakes things up with some big names, not just players, but starting in the front office.
And on the field. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, are you confident that Rojas is back with this team?
No.
No, you can't be.
No, I am not. I mean, I think that's part of it, right? I mean, I think that's part of it. I think that clearly... it was almost a little bit of a surprise that he was coming back this year, right? Like, we didn't mm-hmm. know that for sure. He wasn't their first choice. Nothing that has happened this year. Look, I don't know what a baseball manager's day-to-day is at this point, what information he's getting from the front office, what decisions he's allowed to make, not allowed to make. You can definitely say, though, that whatever his job is, he's not adding to the mix, right? Like, if you're telling me you're having a disappointing season, well, I can have a disappointing season with somebody else.
Yeah.
And the goal should be to get a value add in that position, no matter what the goal or the role of that position is. So, yeah, I would think that 2 years, both out of the playoffs, given the team, and not just out of the playoffs, I mean, really bad, I mean, underperforming seasons, it would not shock me at all if a manager is one of the things on the shopping list.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think what allowed him to be as part of the transition was a number of these players were familiar with him in the minors, right?
Yeah.
You know, Conforto came up with him. Alonso came up with him. You know, there's a number of guys that he was familiar with. So they have been with him. It's a period of transition. You don't want to throw everybody out when the new owner comes in. But now you're looking at this, and here's the sad thing, Gordon. It's not just that they have underachieved, but they have collapsed in the second half, and they haven't rebounded.
No.
I mean, you know, everybody goes through – look, teams go through slumps. They haven't rebounded at all. They're still struggling. And with all due respect, Gordon, I mean, the Yankee pitching staff is struggling because this team doesn't score. I mean, we were joking it was going to be like a bunch of 2-1 games over the weekend. And neither pitching staff really was that great because look at all the runs that were scored with teams that don't score runs.
Yeah, and look, the Yankee pitching staff, which was a major question coming into the year, held their own for a large stretch of the year.
Sure did.
Against
sure
all did. Odds. And I think eventually, with the reliance on the bullpen as much as they have, the fact that the offense has not really been consistent over a long stretch of the season, maybe outside of the 13-game winning streak, I think it just eventually started to show the cracks, and now everything's kind of showing the cracks, right? There's not a single guy out of the bullpen that he comes into the game with the Yankees, and you're like, oh, thank God this guy's in the game right now. Thank God. I know this guy's going to get a nice 1-2. There's not a single guy in that bullpen.
No.
And outside of obviously Aaron Judge, outside of Giancarlo Stanton when he's hot, outside of a guy maybe here or there, the Yankee offense has just never performed up to the level that we have come to expect from the Yankee offense. So, Yeah, I mean, they both have major questions. I think that the thing that the Mets have going for them is that they have a little bit more of a blank slate moving forward and kind of can go in whatever direction they want. Whereas with the Yankees, they got a lot of guys are locked in, right? I mean, you know the Judge is obviously going to be back. Stanton's not going anywhere. LeMahieu's not going anywhere. If they haven't turned the page on Sanchez by now, I can't think that after a season where he's kind of bounced back offensively from where he was in the doldrums as an offensive player, I can't imagine they're going to move on from him there. Aaron Hicks, even though he's always hurt, he's still under contract, I think, till 2026. So the Yankees have a lot of guys locked in that they might not necessarily want to be locked in with, but they are all the same.
Aaron Judge, two-run home run in Baltimore. Yankees with a 2-0 lead as the O's bat in the bottom of the first against Gerrit Cole. Mets with Marcus Stroman on the hill, just underway with St. Louis. Gordon, and this is where I understand what Don is talking about when he talks about, and you'll hear his comments, but his frustration as a Met fan. Adam Wainwright, you wanted to shut him up, Gordon, and you couldn't do that. This is a guy, and this is the frustration you have. There's no revenge. You don't get a chance to get revenge. You don't get a chance to get even. You don't get a chance to shut people up because, you know, the way the team has been, the lack of consistency, the lack of sustainable success that teams that you root for, that you really want to see. See, you don't have that problem, Gordon, as a Yankee fan. You have sustainable success. Do you win every year? No. But you're in the conversation, okay? You have that opportunity. With the Mets, it's like, well, you know, maybe we'll do something. Maybe we won't. Things, you know, everything has to align, right? Like the angle of the moon has to be 17 degrees perpendicular to the sun on a 40-degree angle. Everything has to line up right. And so Wainwright last night with his, well, you know, I just thought the Met fans want to have something. You know, I did it for the Met fans because they wanted, you know, two curves in the changeup. You know, I thought that's what they wanted to see. Oh, you just wanted to snap the taste out of his mouth. But you couldn't do it because they didn't even score a run, Gordon. Not even a run.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, at this point for the Met fan, and look, I love you, Larry. But at this point for the Met fan, you're just torturing yourself. It's over. It's over. It's crystal clear. It's over. So, I mean, look, you watch the games. If you enjoy watching the games, I would say enjoy watch the games, but you're not going to get anything. There's no run. The superhero is not coming through the door. There's not going to be some change. There's going to be a change in moment. No, there's not going to be any change in momentum. This is kind of who the Mets are, and they'll win some games. They'll lose some games, and at the end of the day, I think they're going to be about a 500 team. So if that's the case, you can't be 500 and talking about the playoffs.
No, you can't. It's true. You can't. You don't deserve to be there.
I mean, I know what you're saying. You'd like to shut Adam Wainwright up about, well, you know, I like nostalgia, right?
I got some nostalgia for you. You know, but see, here's my thing. Okay, I'm not going to the playoffs. But you know what? Here's the thing, Gordon. I want to keep you out. If I can't go, you can't go either. And that's not what I'm getting from this team right now. They're not even helping themselves, much less hurting other people going.
Yeah, no, they have not shown the ability to help themselves. I mean, they could have helped themselves for a long stretch, right, when they were in first place. It was there for the taking, and while they did have a nice lead, you know, 4 or 5-game lead at one point, that was the time to kind of put the hammer down while the Braves were stumbling around, while the, you know, everybody else in the division, the Phillies were stumbling around. At that point, the Nationals were still, you know, they hadn't given up yet, so they were kind of kicking things around. And the thing you had going for you was you were the one team that was above 500, and if somebody was going to come and catch you, well, let's see which team it was going to be. But the Mets were never able to take advantage at that point, and unfortunately, this is going to be another year out of the playoffs. So what is that, 6 years in a row, right?
They've
been out of the playoffs. 2015 was the last year.
That's it, yeah. That's it.
That's not – I mean, that's – think about where Met fans were at the start of the year. New owner, new team, you know, a new feel. You make the Lindor move, you sign him right before the season starts, and you felt like, okay, this is a turning of the page. And if I would have told you and given you the bullet points, the cliff notes on everything that happened this year, Met fans, I don't think would have believed that.
Beginning with Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah. Well, look, out of all the ones, I think that one maybe was a little bit more predictable. I mean, you were talking back in spring training when he showed up the first day throwing 100 miles an hour. You were the first one saying, I don't need that. Let's ease into it. Let's not go crazy. It's the first day. Let's not be – my kids have a saying, if somebody's always raising their hand at school, that's a try hard. You know what I mean? We don't need any tryhards here. Let's just ease into it, and let's just kind of go about our business. And unfortunately – the gloom and doom that was right around the corner at every turn when it came to DeGrom this year in terms of injuries and ailments. It eventually came back to bite you.
Yeah, one of the people that's been very disappointing for the Mets offensively, and you would think that he wouldn't be because this is a contract year, has been Michael Conforto, and he talked about his uncertain future.
I definitely have thought about it, but, I mean, there's the options are, wide open. You know, very well could not be the end of my time here. You know, it may be, but it very well couldn't be. And I will say, you know, I grew up here and I learned a lot here. My professional career was here. So, like I said, I'm just focused on finishing the season strong with my teammates. Hopefully not in early October. We want to make that postseason push. And then, you know, we'll get to that. You know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But for right now, I'm just focused on day to day. Each at bat, each pitch, and we'll see what happens at the end of the year.
And here's what's scary, Gordon. He's been hot, in quotes, and he's hitting .226 with a slugging of .376. And he's been hot. He's been struggling, Gordon. He's been under .200 most of the season.
Yeah,
in a walk year.
Yeah, that was kind of look. Last year, the 60-game season, he did kind of outperform. And if you take a look at some of the analytics stats in terms of batting average of balls put in play, he had a very fortunate year. I don't think anybody thought he was going to hit .320 again. But to see the drop in his power, whoever is running the Mets has to get to the bottom of that because look. This might be the type – we've seen a lot of guys have bad years this year, right? You can run them up and down the lineup. Is this just a one-year blip where maybe he put too much pressure on himself in a contract year and just it started going bad, it just kept going bad? Or is there something behind – because to see him go from a guy who was slugging .500 to a guy who's slugging under .400, to me – this might sound blasphemous, but he's always been kind of like a poor man's Bryce Harper in that he's not going to hit for a high average, but he'll get on base, he'll hit with some power, he'll give you an OPS in the 900, the high 800s, maybe not steal the bases of Harper, but that type of stuff. But he'll be a very productive player for you. So if the Mets can get to the bottom of why his power has just fallen off a cliff. This might actually turn out where they might get a bargain on a guy that they know and up until this year, I would think but I would think that if you're the Mets and we're talking about all these changes, the easiest one to envision is after this season saying goodbye to Michael Conforto and maybe a fresh start is needed for everybody.
Especially with the new owner, Gordon.
Yeah, this is not the best way to make a good impression, right?
No. And listen, he'll spend the money. Ask Francisco Lindor. He'll spend the money. It's clear. But, you got to show him something. And really, I guess since Lindor's been back, this is kind of the Lindor we thought as Met fans we were going to get, where he's been solid in the field defensively. He hit some home runs, unfortunately, as you know, this weekend.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And he's been, he's been better offensively. And this is kind of what we expected from him all season long. And so the other question in the back of my mind becomes, Gordon, what – does Javi Baez need to be here for him to hit like this? I mean, he wouldn't hit like this before.
Well, it's already an expensive proposition with Lindor. I mean, if you're going to go re-sign Javi Baez, that's not going to be cheap either. I mean, he's going to be looking at $200 million. You're going to invest all that money in a couple of middle infielders and Baez, who can be a fantastic talent. He has some individual skills that are fantastic, defense, base running, but a guy who's going to hit 200 and strike out and not get on base. I mean, at least with Joey Gallo, he does take a walk, so he'll get on base that way. But Baez is a guy, he's a free swinger. He's striking out 200 times. He's not going to hit for a great average. So is that something that you want to invest a lot of money in?
No.
I thought that page was turned after the whole thumbs down thing, but it seems like since he's played a little bit better, maybe the team has played a little bit better, that there's at least the possibility. And look, if you're you have a player in Francisco Lindor. I would think that if you have a guy who's going to be here, as long as he's going to be here, and he goes to the front office, who's ever running it, and says, I'd really like to play along Javi Baez. He's my guy. I would think that they'd have to kind of make an effort maybe to bring him back, no?
Yeah, but you can't bring him back, Gordon.
I don't
you
think
can't.
So. I don't think I'm just trying to get
into
the mind.
You got too many other holes.
He had those holes when you got him, and you traded one of your top prospects to go get him. I would think that, were you making that move? That's an interesting question. Like, were they making that move because they had to do something, and this was at least a name player that they could bring in that has a connection with Lindor, and it was always going to be a rental? Or is this somebody who at least the door was open to, let's see how it works, let's see how he does, and the door is open to a long-term extension? I mean, it seems kind of hard to believe that that would be. After this year about situational hitting, right, the situational hitting has been so bad, to go out now and say, you know what, we're going to sign the guy we're going to go get is this guy, and we're going to sign him to a long-term deal, the guy that hits 200 and strikes out 200 times.
I mean, I'd rather they got Chris Bryant, because then I could pick where I'm going to play him. I could play him at third. I could put him in the outfield. If Conforto doesn't do well, I can stick him out there. I got more options. I mean, Baez, what? He's either going to play second, where I got Cano coming back, or he's going to play the same position where I got Lindor. What? How does that work?
Maybe you could put him at third. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to work out. I would think that he's probably not going to be back, but it is kind of weird that, like, that was the move that they decided to make, which was not really... It didn't really fill a hole. Mm-mm. And, you know, you take a look at his profile of a guy who's, you know, hitting into 200. You know, he's had a couple of years where he's hit higher than that, but he strikes out a ton. He doesn't get on base. So even when his batting average is in the 270s, 280s, it's kind of an empty 270 because the on-base percentage is just going to be so low. So, look, he does have some unbelievable individual talents, as I said, the defense, the base running, but that would not be the kind of guy. If I'm going out and I'm like, all right, I got – as many holes as the Mets are going to have, I would not be looking to put a lot of eggs in the one basket of one player, and especially if that player is Javi Baez.
No, I need a bunch of players because I got a bunch of holes.
Yeah. Well, look, Uncle Stevie's got a bunch of money, right? I mean, he could shoot up the locks off the wallet and go out and do whatever he wants now.
Yeah, but, you know, but that doesn't mean you're going to win.
Oh, no. Nothing guarantees you wins, right? Nothing guarantees you wins. But,
you know. We'll make him a little better, but I just don't know. I wouldn't do it. That's me. But, yeah, listen, he's the only. He can do what he wants. Gerrit Cole struggling a little bit. The bases are now loaded with two out.
Larry, I'm just telling you right now. If this goes the way it's looking right now, if Gerrit Cole can't go out against the Orioles and shut them down, forget about Don's rant. I'm going to be yelling and screaming because this is absolutely – I mean, this is – if you can't get a win against the Orioles – with the $324 million man on the mound. Mm-hmm. Come on. This is ridiculous.
With the lead. He's already given you
a lead. With the lead, right. Right off the bat. Two-run home run. Boom.
With the lead.
And he's already thrown 25 pitches against the Orioles in the first inning.
And walked
the Orioles cheating? Are they whistling? Do they have cameras? What the hell is going on?
Gordon, take a deep breath. Cole got out of the first inning, left the bases loaded.
Well, it's going to be a long night for Yankee fans. I don't know if it's going to be a long night for Gerrit Cole because he needed 30 pitches, basically, to get through the first inning against the Baltimore Orioles.
And you need him to have a long night.
I'd like him to have as long a night as possible. I know he's coming off the injury and all these kind of things, but yeah, because as soon as you go to that bullpen, I mean, that's like Russian roulette out there. I mean, you pick your poison, right, these days, so... Yeah, you'd like to hope, even coming off the injury, he could get you 5-6 innings. But with the amount, you know, a couple of walks, a hit in the first inning, it's never easy with the Yankees.
Never.
So who knows? Sometimes you don't get to him the first inning. You never get to him. It just seems
That's
like
true.
The Orioles these days kind of have the Yankees numbers, despite the fact that they're 50 games under 500.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Mets have a 2-spot over St. Louis as St. Louis comes to bat in the top of the second. Let's get to the phones. Spike is in St. Pete. He's first on Carlin.
Good evening, fellas. I checked all my clocks, so I guess you're on early. My brilliant old mind figured out. Listen, Gordon, this is the way you got to look at it. That box that they put on the screen, get rid of it. Because I thought Cole, you know, I watched every pitch like you did. The umpire was just inconsistent. His breaking ball was the last one, was all over the place, but he threw 3 or 4 fastballs that had some hop on it. And you have to remember, too, the Orioles are 50 games under, but the Orioles have a lot of guys that can hit the ball out of that damn box, you know?
I know, but they're terrible. They're 50 games under 500, Spike. You've got to be able to hammer this. This is the team you pray to play. There's no team you would rather play than the Orioles.
That's correct, but isn't the rule of thumb with aces, what you just said before, that if they get out of that first inning, they usually don't get him, they get him. Even though when he went over to first base, that showed me he's not all there yet. He looked very sluggish getting off the mound. Now, what was his injury? You remember?
Hamstring.
Oh, hamstring. Okay, there it is. Ask and you shall seek and find out. That's it. If he gives you five tonight with 95 pitches and you got an 8-0 lead, you know, that's what you got to hope for. You know, I kept telling you guys for so many times I called you ebbs and flows. You remember, Larry. Mm-hmm. You know, teams are either hot. They get hot or they don't get hot. And everyone matches up. Well, they got Baltimore and then they got the other bottom feeder. You know, those other teams ain't laying down either. You know, those young kids that are up there are usually playing for their job. So I would take nothing for granted. I don't believe in the win-loss-loss-win thing. Cole is their ace. He should give you 5 or 6 innings and 90 and 95 pitches unless they're ahead by a big score. But I'll tell you last thing, and thanks for the time. Good to hear you early. It really helps me out. I really think that the format is intriguing now because – listen, we don't know. No one can guess who it's going to be, Boston or the Yankees, and going day to day. FanGraphs are a waste of time. When you get up or I get up in the morning and click it on and the percentage goes up or down a point. It's going to come down to the last 3-4 games. We all know it by now, and I don't care who you play. It's baseball. Anything can happen. But the umpiring is very inconsistent. And if Cole could adjust to it, I think he'll be fine because that was a rough first inning, 28 pitches or something.
It was.
Yeah, 29
all right,
pitches.
Boys, enjoy. I'll be listening.
All right, Spike, thanks for the phone call. The only problem with what Spike is saying, Gordon, is that they don't lay down for Tampa, and they don't lay down for Toronto, and
you
they
know,
clearly don't lay down for Boston.
No. The Rays, obviously, this year were 18-1 against the Orioles. The Blue mm-hmm. Jays were 11-5, and the Red Sox are 9-4. So, those teams don't seem – and, you know – look, if this year the Yankees end up missing the playoffs, there will be no shortage of woulda, coulda, between all the games that they lost last inning, right, the Field of Dreams game, the Astros, I mean, all those games that they lost.
Injuries, COVID.
Right, but I think more glaring than all of those things, if you end up, you know, not hammering the Orioles like you should here, and you got the chance right now, this is not, you know, April or May, and oh, we'll get him again later. This, you know, you need every single win the rest of the way this year. And if you don't handle your business and at least take 2 of 3 in this series, well, then you've got nobody to blame but yourself.
Yep, no question about it. Glenn's in Ramsey. Hey, Glenn, you're next on 98.7.
Good evening, boys. Great job tonight. Gordon, first things first, Mets made the playoffs in 2016, one game wild card. You forgot about it.
Yeah, oh, so did okay. I. That's
all
how
right,
long
it's
been.
Only 5 years.
And that was a classic game because it was Baumgarten against Syndergaard, and Connor Gillespie was the difference hitting that home run in the 10th inning.
That's right.
Also, okay, Conforto, who is a free agent just like Syndergaard, they're going to get qualified. They're going to get to qualify, and I'm going to tell you right now, very good chance. Scott Boras, if he can't get a multi-year deal with a high number for Conforto, he's gonna tell Conforto to take the old hockey bridge deal and take that 1 year deal for $20 million. That's gonna happen. Syndergaard is gonna go 2 years with no pitching, and he's gonna get qualified at $20 million. So the system is so messed up. A guy like Conforto is He really has nothing to worry about because there's a $20 million pincushion waiting for him. That's what's amazing. Even though Boras is his agent, Boras is going to tell him, you know what, no one's offering us any big money. Let's take the qualifier, and we'll play it out. Baez, they can't qualify because they traded for him.
Mm-hmm.
So on that end, and then O'Neill, what upsets me is the fact is they messed around with him. He could have been just like Daniel Murphy.
Yeah.
Juan Changle and all.
Yep.
Guys,
they moved him around.
Hand. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Glenn. They moved him around, Gordon, and I think that didn't help him any. I think first he's in right field, and he's in left field.
I mean, wouldn't this be the year
that he
kind of settled into a position, right? Second base was finally open for him, and that's supposed to be his best position, and this has been by far his worst year.
Absolutely.
So that one doesn't make sense. And look, I understand what he's saying about the qualifying offer. I there's a lot to be decided because the CBA is up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Mets will know whether or not the you know what a guy is probably going to do in terms of the qualifying offer after the year that Conforto has had. If you're sinking $20 million, if you know he's going to take the qualifying offer, I don't know if I necessarily would present him with the qualifying offer then, right?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't, Gordon. I wouldn't. And I know, you know, let you say it's going to be the – listen, they may not even be baseball for half the year next year.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's, we are kind of putting the cart before the horse there a little bit, yeah.
You know, that may not even be. But I'm saying, listen, I have to really think about – I have to really look at him and say, what has he shown me consistently over his time here to make me think that even $20 million is okay for him for 1 year?
Yeah.
I don't know, Gordon. I don't know.
And I think we kind of expect Steve Cohen to go out and as I said before, like shoot the locks off the wallet and all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he's going to be spending like a drunken sailor. I don't know that he's going to be just burning through money like it's Brewster's Millions. I think that there is going to be some sort of budget. We've seen teams I think the guy Eddie Rosario, who was with the Twins, he didn't get a qualifying offer last year. I feel like there's been a couple more examples of guys not getting qualifying offers. So I don't think it's set in stone necessarily that the Mets would, if that's the right number. I don't know, even know that that would be the right number moving forward. But if it's something like that, it's 18, 19, 20 million, I don't think that he's that kind of player even in a good year.
No, I agree. I agree. Gordon, if you're Wells, how after giving up a home run like that from Voit, I would just like, take me out. I'm done. I can't throw. I threw a pitch, a curveball, and he hit it like that. I'm done. I'm walking off the mound. I'm through. I'm done.
Well, it would be helpful if his defense helped him out because the next batter was Glaber, who hit like a little can of corn to right field that somehow fell in. Now, they were shifting against him, so the second baseman was on the other side of the bag, but the ball was in the air for a very – like, where was the outfielder playing? It's Camden Yards. If you're playing the outfield there and it goes over your head, it's probably going to be off that wall, so – yeah, very strange. And then Glaber steals second. The ball gets it. The Orioles are looking like the Orioles. That's the best news that we've gotten all night long. So at least for tonight. Now, the Yankees will score 10 runs tonight and then get hit three hit tomorrow. So let's live in the now.
One game at a time, my friend. Yes, take it exactly. One game at a time. That's all you can do. All right, let's turn our attention to some football, Gordon. And the Giants are in an interesting situation. They have this is crazy. It's week two. This is a big game for them, Gordon. I'm saying this is awesome. This is a big game. It's week two. You're playing against the backup quarterback of the Washington football team, but they have a very good defense. Now, the defense wasn't great in week one. And, of course, as you mentioned, which I think is a great point, is that, you know, week one is the ultimate, you know, panic week. Oh, my God, everything's the worst.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's like, oh, they're no good. They'll never be any good. This is the way the season's going to go. But, you know, let's face it. The Giants defense did not play well and the offense was worse. So here we go now to face a Washington team and Saquon Barkley fires the first salvo. And look, I understand what he means, Gordon. He's just back from an injury, right? 51 week layoff, major knee injury. And he's quoted as saying, I don't think the schedule is ideal for coming back from a major injury, but that's what it is. That's the challenge I have to face. Now, Gordon, he wasn't great. I mean, what was he? He wasn't great in the first game.
No.
And so what do we think he's going to be in this game?
Yeah. I mean, maybe the takeaway from the offense in week one should have been at least partially. We all have made the point this offseason that for Daniel Jones to get back to first-year Daniel Jones, he needs Saquon Barkley back. And not just back physically, but back like Saquon Barkley is really back, not, you know, whatever it was that he finished with, 23 yards or whatever it was. And he was not right. I mean, he didn't have a whole lot to work with. He didn't get all that many opportunities. I think he had 5 yards on his first play, and that was the most yards he had on any of the carries he made. So they need to get him up to speed quickly, and I get it. It's a short week. It's a short turnaround. He's coming off a knee injury. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to burn him out too early, but the Giants – they need to get a far better performance than they had week one. It would be hard to be any worse, but the good thing is if they are able to get a win against Washington and then they get the Falcons the following week, there's a way here for the Giants to turn things around and get the bad taste out of their mouth in week one very, very quickly, but it all kind of hinges on this week.
It does. And listen, this is a team, and it's funny because really when you think about it, the Giants have been really good with Washington.
One of the few teams Daniel Jones beats.
It's true. It is. You know, of course, they had some help last year because, the Riverboat Gambler, Mr. Rivera, decided not to go.
Drove the riverboat right into the iceberg. I mean, yeah, that was bad.
So that helped him out. But, you know, listen, Gordon, for me, and we'll hear from Saquon Barkley in a second. For me, this is not only the offense, not only Daniel Jones, not only Saquon Barkley, but Gordon, this is a short week. I don't know what they can do. Maybe they have to get some tight ends, but they got to do something with that offensive line.
Yeah.
They do. I mean, they're still struggling.
They got a lot of areas, right? I mean, they got a lot of areas to clean up in a very short time to clean them up. And I didn't even think the offensive line was all that terrible considering what I was expecting from week one based on last year and the preseason. So I didn't think that the offensive line was all that bad. But, you know, Bradley Chubb didn't play on Sunday against them. So that might have been one of the reasons why they didn't look that bad. You know, now going up against a Washington team that certainly has a very formidable front four. This is a game, though, if you're the Giants, right? Team in your division that you're expected to compete against, and they have a backup quarterback. There's no reason why you're not winning this game.
Nope, you got to win this game. You have to win this game, Gordon. This is a major game. You have to win this game. It's a divisional game, which means it's worth what? Depending on who you talk to, which coach, it's either worth two or a game and a half in your division. You need to win this game. So we'll see what happens. Here's what Saquon Barkley said about playing off on short rest.
I don't think the schedule's ideal for coming back off a major knee injury to have two games back to back, but that's what it is. That's what's in front of me, and that's the challenge I have to face. And to the question of, you know, my workload and how much can I handle, you know, it's easy for me to stay up here and say, I don't know, just listen to the coaches. But when you're in the game and your adrenaline going in and you start getting a rhythm and you start feeling yourself again, that can go from less reps or more reps. I don't know, to be honest. So I don't make that decision. I'm just playing my role by showing up on Thursday and the plays that I do get, try to help my team to the best of my capability.
Barkley adds that he believes the Giants have the talent to be successful.
We're talented. We know the talent that we have. We trust the coaching staff that we have. But it's on us to go out there and capitalize, and that's offense, defense, and special team. I feel like we're able to do that more consistent. The season's going to play out how we want to play out. I think that's where, you know, we find ourselves, whether it's from when I've been here or the last 2 years or even last week, just those situations we didn't capitalize on. And that puts yourself behind in ball games and put yourself out of position to win games. And we have the talent. We have the playmakers. I think you guys saw what Shep's able to do in the slot, KG making plays, DJ making big throws. The list goes on and on. You know, we have so much talent on the team, so we just got to go out there and capitalize, and so we can be able to show our talent and show how special we can be as an offense and a team as a whole.
I will say this. Sterling Shepard had a heck of a game against Denver last week on Sunday.
Yeah, he was great. And he had the big touchdown early on. So, that's one aspect. But, I mean, they have to figure out a way, even if it's only a play here or there, to get Barkley to be a factor. I don't know how you draw it up, you know, get him out in space, figure out a way for him to get a little room to operate, and hopefully he hits a home run. Because if you drop to 0-2, I think Giant fans, I was listening to Rothenberg on Monday, and I think that he's in the same spot a lot of Giant fans. They feel like, here we go again. Mm-hmm. And if you go out there on Thursday, you know, you're 10 days or 2 weeks into the season and you're already 0-2, I think a lot of Giant fans are going to be like, here we go again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And why would you not?
It's all the same issues.
It's the same issues. And once again, and yeah, of course it's unfair. The quarterback gets too much blame and too much credit. We get it. But, Gordon, once again, we end up with this conversation about Daniel Jones. And it's so similar, even though the year is different from where we had the conversation with Sam Darnold last year, because Darnold was going into the year where you had to decide that you were going to give him big money or not, if he was going to be your guy. And so you needed to see something from him last year to help you make that decision. Well, Jones is 2 years away from that, but still, because of the way the Giants drafted and the fact that they have some picks that they can move up, they have to see what he has this year, because they may have to go draft a quarterback for next season.
Yeah, oh, I mean, that's very much on the table, especially with the extra first-round pick, right? Or even if it's not draft a quarterback, go get if it does turn out that there's some of these quarterbacks, these veteran quarterbacks that are available, yeah, I mean, they very well might be in the market for that. I mean, we're not at that point yet, but, I mean, that's the question coming into the year. And nothing that happened in week one made you feel better about Daniel Jones as your quarterback, right?
No. Mm-mm. No, it didn't. It didn't. If anything, you got more questions.
Right, you got more material, right? If this were a sports court of law, you'd have more evidence in your favor if you were the prosecution.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we all believe we can do it. We've got to execute and be more consistent with it. I think situationally we got to be better in certain areas and convert some more opportunities. But I think we believe we can do it, and we know we can. So it's about going out there and executing.
Daniel Jones of the New York Football Giants knows the offense can be better than what they showed against the Denver Broncos at home. Hardesty and Damer in for Carla, really, on 98.7 ESPN. They better be better.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine 16 more games of that?
Not good at all. Not good at all. Quickly on the scoreboard, Yankees up 5-0 over Baltimore. St. Louis has cut the Met lead in half. They trail 2-1 while batting in the top of the fourth.
I Chad screwed Pennington. It up, too, before, Larry. I said that the Jays had the 1-0 lead. It was the Rays who actually right. lead 1-0, and it's top five now, so let me correct okay. that.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, let's go now. DiPietro and Rothenberg had Chad Pennington, the former Jet, on, and he gave his thoughts on Daniel Jones.
Well, when you look at some of the things that he can do from the pocket and what he has done, there's talent there. And obviously, I think everybody's on him about turning the football over. This was something that was a Jameis Winston problem as well. And so that's something that he's got to be able to fix. What you learn at the quarterback role and really in the league itself is that more games are lost than they are won. Typically, it's a play or two that you didn't make or didn't do to cause the outcome of a game. It's rarely just great plays that win the game. You can go back and look at three or four plays and go, well, if we just took care of the ball here, if we just did this, you know, the outcome would have been different. And so I think that's what Daniel has to learn. He's got to learn that, you know, sometimes, especially when you're scrambling with the football, your job is to get a little bit of yardage and then get down.
Yeah, and well, getting down is kind of a problem, Gordon, because sometimes he loses the football when he gets down.
that
could be
problem.
An issue.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, and listen, it's hard for – there's so many things that make you a franchise quarterback, right? And just a bunch of things. Availability, being able to make big throws, great decisions. And not turning the football over is, like, right up there. And Gordon, his turnover ratio, whether it's lost fumbles, whether it's interceptions, you know, it's the same old narrative. I know as a Giant fan, if I were a Giant fan, I'd be sick of hearing it over and over and over again. But the bottom line is he continues to do it over and over and over again. And so, you know, you would love to have – that's why it's so important for Saquon Barkley to be able to run the football so that he's got to handle it less. And then it allows him to be able to – it loosens up the defense, and then he's able to make some more plays and able to move this offense going, because in theory, this offense should be much better than what they showed.
There's so many things on the list that we always look for – with a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, but the first rule of any young quarterback is it's almost like a doctor. Do no harm, right? Like, don't mm-hmm. be the reason that you're costing the team with your own act. You know, it's one thing about not completing passes or doing this or doing that, but the first thing you have to do is to have success is to not continually make the same mistakes. And with the Giants, it feels like the conversation centers on the same thing. It's not even like they're making new mistakes. They're just making the same mistakes. Oh, and with Daniel Jones, it's about the turnovers. And I know it was only one on Sunday, but it could have been a lot more. As we kind of pointed out last night, that final drive, he could have been picked off a bunch of times. And now to have 40 turnovers in 28 games, it can't. If this is going to continue anywhere close to this rate, nothing else matters. Forget about it. If you can't succeed when your quarterback plays at that level and turns the ball over that regularly.
And unfortunately for him, Gordon, it's always where these turnovers happen. And this was a red zone turnover for them that he fumbled the ball. They were marching in, okay? And Lord knows the defense needed them to extend that drive because they had been on the field forever. And here you're marching in. You've got the Denver Broncos defense on their heels. And you, great play. He goes right up the middle running. And then right before he's ready to get down, he loses the football. And so that's a turnover. Momentum-wise, it's done. It just changes everything. It was just, it turned out to be, because they didn't score until it was, again, until it was late, it turned out to be a turning point in that game.
Yeah, like Warner Wolf used to say about turn your sets off there. That fumble there after the touchdown, 17-7, the Broncos get a field goal, 20-7, turn your sets off there. At that point, it was over. And it was just a question of how bad it was going to get. No, I mean, look, he definitely, I don't know that there is a turnover quotient in terms of the most vital areas of the game, but if there ever were that stat, he would be very high up on that list, because it does seem like every time that when he turns it over, it's not in the opening couple of minutes and it doesn't result in any points. It seems like it always results in points and it always comes back to bite the Giants.
No question about it. Sacrifice flies. St. Louis has tied the Mets at 2. Marcus Stroman toughening 2 throwing errors. Now St. Louis runners is 2nd and 3rd and 2 out. I'm holding Olavsky because I got calls. We'll get to Olavsky, though, I promise. 1-800-919-3776. Let me talk to Kevin in Jersey. Kevin, you're next on 98.7.
How's it going, guys? I just wanted to jump in on what you were saying about Daniel Jones. And I think what you can liken it to is a late-stage Eli Manning. Daniel Jones can't stop turning the ball over. And what I've come to realize is that Daniel Jones, for all intents and purposes, has all the negative traits of Eli Manning with none of the positive traits. Eli Manning had flashes of brilliance early on in his career.
Yeah, he did. He had some turnover issues. There's no question about it. And listen, Kevin, here's the other side of it, and thanks for the phone call. As a young quarterback, you understand that your young quarterback's going to have turnover issues. The problem is, Gordon, it's the same.
It's the same. Yep.
That's absolutely the issue. Normally what you want when you see your quarterback mature is that, okay, sometimes it happens, but you don't want them to make the same mistake over and over and over again. And, you know, not picking on them, but that's what happens. That's what's happened.
And we were kind of hoping that this problem was resolving itself last year. It did seem like he kind of cut down on it, but for it to pop up, you know, it just felt like Sunday was a lot of the same old things. Now, the defense was a new thing because last year's defense was great, but it felt like a lot of the same old things with the Giants, right? It's the quarterback. It's the turnover. It's the offense not scoring any points. It's the offensive line. It's like the same things time and time and time again. And I can't say I blame Giant fans for being like, you know what? Enough's enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Carlos is in Toms River. He's next on 98.7.
Hey, how you doing, fellas? Hey, Gordon, I actually tried to call your show on Saturday, but I got disconnected. I actually was calling to see why aren't the Dolphins getting any respect? Also, what you thought about the game this past weekend. I was kind of concerned about Gesicki not really being a factor. And then what do you think about the game this weekend?
Well, the Dolphins don't get any respect. They haven't won a playoff game in 20 years. Well, how much respect should they be getting? I mean, you have to actually do something to get respect. I am not high on the Dolphins this year. And speaking of quarterbacks, I'm not high on Larry. Tua, again, it's only one game. You're not going to overreact too much. But he looked exactly the same guy. And talk about do no harm. He threw an interception that if it were a rookie, if Zach Wilson threw that kind of interception, every Jet fan would be sick to their stomach. And that's the kind of interception. And almost they really got lucky on Sunday to beat the Patriots. But it's very, very difficult to be too high on the Dolphins because they have gotten a lot. They've had a lot of high picks. They've had 9 picks in the first 2 rounds the last 2 years. And they have not, at least so far, it doesn't look like they've gotten a lot of them right. And the biggest one they got wrong was they took Tua instead of Justin Herbert. And Herbert looks like an absolute star.
It looks good.
And Tua looks like an absolute mess. So that's bad.
This does not look like the same Tua that came on to rescue Alabama in the second half, does it?
No, it does not. He's never looked comfortable. Now, look, the offensive line is not great. You know, there's things going on there. But this offseason for them was about surrounding him with the talent that, you know, taking deep shots down the field. Jalen Waddle's going to be this speed guy. And he looked like the same guy. It's all well and good with him when you draw it up, right? First drive of the game, you know exactly what you're going to do. First drive coming out of the half, you know exactly what but when the bullets start flying and things start happening, you got to go to the second and third read. Yikes, it's not good. It's a lot like Darnold, right? Starts forcing things, starts making bad reads, starts forcing things into coverage, and Yeah, look, after watching that game, I tweeted out, I think that Deshaun Watson's asking price is going to be 5 number one picks. I think the price is only going to go up.
That's when you tweeted that out. Okay.
Yeah. Tua was
What do you think about Buffalo this week?
Well, look, Buffalo, the performance they had. Now, I did not watch that game yet. I have Game Pass. I'm trying to go back and watch all the games. I've not watched that game, but you know, just kind of watching it secondarily while the other stuff was going on. It seemed like they were in control of that game early on, and then it never. You kept kind of waiting for them to put the pedal to the metal, and apparently Josh Allen kind of had a rough day. So a lot of the same kind of mistake throws deep down the field that he had 2 years ago. Now last year, he was in the MVP conversation, and we thought, we thought that that's okay. This is who he is now, right? Maybe that progress is not completely linear, where it's like, okay, he's here, and then next year he's going to be better, or maybe it's going to be kind of up and down. So again, it's only 1 week. This is a big game though for Buffalo. You don't want to start out 0-2, and Josh Allen tortured the Dolphins last year. He absolutely torched them. So. It'll be a very interesting game, week two, for the Dolphins. I'm just thankful they got one of those two, because I was looking at the start of the year, Patriots-Bills, 0-2. That's not the way you want to go. So.
Yeah, but you always do well against the Patriots early, Gordon.
It does seem like that Flores has a good read, early. Although they got very lucky. I mean, the Patriots should have won that game. They had a late fumble, something that they never do, and a mistake that really came back to haunt them. So their defense is legit, and I'll tell you, Mac Jones,
yeah.
Again, I'll preface it with, it's only 1 week, it's only one game. Gotcha. I'm sure teams are going to get a read on him and all these type of things. He looked very comfortable, and maybe it's the team. I'm not saying he's going to have anywhere near the same level of success as the previous guy, but man, he looked like Brady in the huddle. You know, the different motions he was making, the throws and the type of plays that he was making, the dump off to the backs, hitting guys down the field. He looked very, very good week one.
There you go, Jet fans. You got a scouting report on Mac Jones.
Not the one you want.
And Gordon, I got some more comments for you, but let's go to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. Mark is in Newark. Joins us next on 98.7. Hey, Mark.
What's going on, fellas?
Mark. Everything's good. Mark, what's happening?
And you know, Larry, come on. First, let me say that when I was 8 years old, Sam Bam Cunningham was one of my favorite players, if not my favorite player in the football. I'm going to also say my condolences to Randall and for the loss of his brother and their family for the loss of Sam. When I was a kid, bro, man, watching Sam. And actually, that New England team, Steve Grogan, reminded me of Steve Young before Steve Young.
Yeah.
And then I got older and I got to see Randall play. I always used to imagine that when Randall did all those amazing things that he did that nobody else did, I always thought that he would be like, yo, bro, check this out. Watch this. You know, like that kind of thing that brothers do. And I always imagined that to be a big motivating factor for Randall as well. I think that's beautiful stuff, really. On the Jets. My take is just different because it's mine. The first half, remember when they used to play that football game between the college All-Stars versus the Super Bowl, was it loser or whatever? They did that for many years, and then they stopped it. Well, you know, obviously, but that game Sunday reminded me of that in the first half, because the Jets looked like a college team playing against a bad pro team or whatever the case may be. And what I'm absolutely ecstatic about is the second half. I don't know if it was Michelle LaFoya or whoever the sideline woman reporter was. I don't remember which one, but they flashed down to her, and she said, it seems to me like the momentum has changed. And when she said that, that's exactly what I was thinking when she said it. The Jets came out in the second half, and I think, yes, A, I think that Ty Johnson's our best running back. B, I think that Denzel Mims needs to be accompanied with Davis. I think that's our starting lethal combination and will be for a long time. And I also think this. C.J. Mosley, whatever it is, when I said told you earlier that I think he's the captain and he's the defensive quarterback, in the second half, Carolina, that pro team that was playing the college team, was getting their butt kicked. And the Jets did take the momentum. And I believe if they had another minute and a half in the football, they'd have won the game. Yeah. They showed so much growth just at the halftime adjustments. And leading that into this game coming, Bill Belichick knows that they tried to run a little bit. I think they should have been using Ty the whole game. That's just me. I think he has more continuity with the line than the other two backs that they used. But he can't run every play. But Bill Belichick is going into this game being him, and he's going to make sure that he stops the running game. But he also knows that it's necessary, Larry. It's absolutely necessary that the Jets don't give up on their running game. They got to come with that same attitude of we're going to stick with it because Zach is showed in that second half he got comfortable with how to move with that line. And that's why they took the momentum and started and basically shut them down in the second half. So this game, I'm going to be looking at the offensive line play in complement with Ty Johnson back there and commitment from Salah to don't give up on this running game. We still got to be a run-first team. That's what I got today.
I hear you, Mark. Thanks for the phone call and thanks for your thoughts. Gordon, let me follow up on that to say that here's what Belichick's going to take away. Mark's right. He's going to take away the run, and he's going to take away the tight end because that's what Zach Wilson was comfortable with early, right? He was hitting the tight ends, getting to the tight ends, because that's all the time he had to find people was the tight end short. So if Belichick takes those two things away, Gordon, and the offensive line is status quo, okay? Let's say they're status quo. They're going to have a hard time scoring. They're going to have a hard time scoring. They're going to have a hard time moving the ball up and down the field. And the concern becomes that it's like a Giants game, right, where you're not moving the ball, and you kind of saw it in the first half for them last week, and the defense is trudging back out on the field and trudging back out on the field. And listen, while C.J. Mosley was very good last week, Gordon, you're asking a lot out of him. You're asking him to cover backs and tight ends. I mean, you're asking a lot out of him.
No question. I mean, you've been waiting a very long time for him to have an impact, and now it's almost like he's going to be making up for lost time with the amount of things you're asking him to do. I did want to kind of hit on the Mims thing about how Mims has to be playing more. This really shouldn't be a surprise. And if you are of the belief that you like the coach, you like the coaching staff, you believe in the new people that are put in place, well, they've kind of told you they're not big fans of Denzel Mims. From training camp when he was running with backups to the fact that they went out and signed Davis to the contract that they did, that they draft Elijah Moore in the second round the way they did. The fact that you had the guys missing on Sunday and Mims played three or four snaps that he played?
Yeah.
He did not play a lot. Yeah, and late in the game. I mean, that tells you that this coaching staff, for whatever reason, is either trying to send him a message or they just don't believe in him.
Mm-hmm.
This is not – they signed the kid Keelan Cole as well. That's another guy they brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Crowder.
Had Crowder.
They could have moved Crowder in the offseason, and they decided not to do it. So I know Jet fans think that Denzel Mims had thought it last year, oh, man, this guy's going to be unbelievable. Well, the coaching staff doesn't agree.
Right. It's something they've seen. There's no question about it. It's something they've seen.
This is not just something that they're toying with you know what I mean? Like, they obviously see something that they don't like, and that's why they're not trusting him to get more playing time.
Now, that can change.
Oh, of course.
You know, and I will say to you that his ability to make the catches he made late in the game gives him the opportunity to show them, I can work hard. Because normally, Gordon, that's what it is. You know what I'm saying? If you've got a draft choice that's not playing, normally it's because he's not working hard. And what you're asking him to do, he's not getting it either. He's not grasping the playbook, or he's just not – when you go through those classroom questions, Gordon, he's not answering them right. There's something going on with him And you know, once again, with him, it's availability, right? It's another story with him. Last year was availability. This in the training camp, it was availability. Then bad seafood, he was sick. So, you know, young players don't get it, Gordon. You got to be available. If you're not available, you're behind. And when you have a new coaching staff with a new scheme and a new playbook and new verbiage and everything, you got to be up on it. And if you're not up on it, very simply, because unlike even though we talk about the NBA, Gordon, and you know, players run everything in the NBA. Players control the league. They don't control playing time.
And he's a guy, Mims.
You don't perform, you don't play.
It's not a case of, he's part of the old regime. He was drafted by Douglas.
That's right. Yep.
And they went out and signed Corey Davis to the contract they did, drafted more. I mean, Braxton Berrios was playing more than Denzel Mims on Sunday.
Right. Yep.
And that's not even accounting for the guys who missed. So
no, exactly.
Maybe his role does expand over time. Maybe he shows the coaching staff what he needs to show them. But that should not really have been all that much of a surprise, given all the signs that they. I mean, this was a sign in training camp that they were not.
It's true.
They were not big Denzel Mims fans. So
nope. So the Mets have a chance, Gordon, in this game.
I keep trying to change the channel, and my remote will not allow me. It keeps telling me, no, Gordon, it doesn't matter anymore. Just stay on the Yankees. What's going on with the Mets, Larry? Tell me.
It's tied at two. Uh-huh. Mets have the bases loaded, bottom of the fifth with one out.
I'll change the channel.
No. No, don't do that because I you're
change the mojo,
stay
on right?
The,
you don't
stay
want to
on
change the mojo. Eventually, the Mets got to get a big hit here, right?
Yes, yeah, stay on the – I'll keep you updated with the Mets. Stay where you are. You've got a 5-1 lead. I'm a little upset that Cole only gave you five.
He was kind of laboring to get through that.
With 108 pitches and five innings?
Against the Orioles.
I mean, I don't know how you're going to mix and match these next, when you got to get 15
outs. What inning is
Haney's
in? When is Haney coming in? And I'll watch the Mets that entire inning, because the last thing I want is any more of that guy.
Hey, wait a minute. Did I see something that Sal Romano's back?
Is he back? I thought they got rid of him.
Did I see something where he's back?
I don't know.
He is back.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought.
He's back.
Yeah. It could be in this game.
I would rather have him than Haney. As I said on Saturday, you know, Haney's not a starter. He's not a reliever. He's a decider. He comes in the game and he decides it.
Yeah. Unfortunately for the other team.
Not for you. Right, yeah. Not for you. Not in a good way.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.